evening, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists. Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists. Today is a special day, a day of commemoration, where we reflect on the founding of the United Lodge of Theosophists and the life and the efforts of the founder of the United Lodge, Mr. Robert Crosby. We will begin with a short biography. This will be followed by readings from Mr. Crosby, Mr. Judge, and HPB, and then that will be followed by a talk. The United Lodge of Theosophists, its purpose and mission. That theosophy was maintained in its purity in her lifetime was not due to H.P. Blavatsky's followers, but to her loyalty. To her loyalty to the masters and their plan. That theosophy was maintained in an unbroken continuity for 5 years after HPB's departure was not due to the Theosophical Society, its officers, or its fellows, but to William Q. Judge and his loyalty to teacher and teachings. And so we here at the United Lodge of Theosophists and at all the ULTs throughout the world promulgate the original teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. Today we take a moment to reflect upon and commemorate the life's work of one Robert Crosby, the founder of the United Lodge of Theosophists. For indeed, it is said that the theosophy of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge is in the world today, that the history of the Theosophical movement is of record today, that the movement itself continues as it was begun, true without variableness or the shadow of turning from the original inspiration, the original channel, is not due to any Theosophical Society or its officers, successors, or leaders, but to the loyalty of Robert Crosby, a humble pupil who chose with his eyes open to follow in the footsteps of his predecessors. Any sincere and open-minded theosophist can do as Robert Crosby did, can sow as he sowed, can reap as he reaped. Mr. Crosby was born in Montreal, Canada, January 19, 1849. He's of Scottish descent. He was raised in a somewhat fundamentalist, church-going Christian family, and as a young adult, having been invited to join his church's communion, for which he felt unfit, he became disenchanted with the religion of his family. Eventually, his parents loosened their ties with the Presbyterian Church as well, in favor of a more rational view of religion. Not knowing it consciously at the time, Mr. Crosby would later reflect that he had all along been in search for, quote, truth which must be knowledge, end quote. Perhaps a knowledge which he would find in due course by seeking it out and by fitting himself for it. At the age of 20, Mr. Crosby, with a partner some years his senior, started a leather and shoe manufacturing business in Montreal, Canada. He would soon marry his partner's daughter, and upon the death of his mother-in-law, some in the family became involved or had an interest in spiritualism. Crosby, whose mother was a Scottish Highlander, with powers of clairvoyance often derived with such lineage, Crosby, with limited participation, witnessed and personally experienced hypnotism, clairvoyance, etc., and some fraud. But as we said, he limited his participation because his instinct would develop a sense of the inherent dangers of such practices. Eventually, opportunity was presented to the two partners in Canada. They sold their business to their advantage and moved to Boston, where they reestablished a business, a successful business, along the same lines. By 1886, in his late 30s, Mr. Crosby learned of the proposed establishment of a branch of the Theosophical Society in Boston. He attended its first meeting. Thereafter, he would soon meet William Q. Judge, arriving from New York to speak at the Boston branch. After this particular meeting, when he met Mr. Judge, Judge was leaving for his hotel and turned over to Crosby and called to him, quote, "Good night, Crosby, I've got you on my list." And Mr. Crosby says, with that simple statement, he says, a veil was lifted for him. A tie was formed with Mr. Judge that has never since been broken. In time, Mr. Crosby was made the president of the Theosophical Society in Boston. Thereafter, he had responsibilities all over New England with the Theosophical Society. Mr. Judge would travel to the Boston branch frequently, and when he did, he would stay with Crosby at his house, and vice versa with Mr. Crosby when he would travel to New York. After the passing of Mr. Judge, as the years proceeded, Mr. Crosby, during his tenure, realized the idea that the most important work of the movement was not on the surface. Organizations, form, authority, these defeat understanding. He recognized that attacks, splits, controversies, and other foibles in the organization that had been perpetuated during the years, these disagreements had arisen among personalities in the Theosophical Society. It was not due to doctrinal differences. During these years, a Catherine Tingley would claim successorship to Mr. Judge, and of her own authority, she would change the name of the Theosophical Society to the Universal Brotherhood and Theosophical Society, and she moved the headquarters to Point Loma, California. Now at this time, Mr. Crosby in Boston, being removed from the issues and not knowing the true state of affairs, had no reason to doubt the changes that he heard were occurring. Later he would reflect, "I should have known by other means the true state of affairs, but this had happened. When Judge passed out of life, I lost touch. Doubtless I relied on others too much and had not exercised my own intuition." Instead, he relied on the intuition of another, a mistake. A grave mistake which would in time serve him as a valuable lesson, an opportunity to, as he says, to strengthen my weakness in that direction. Nevertheless, having followed the intuition of another, Crosby liquidated his assets, turned his fortune over to the Theosophical Society as required by this new leader, and moved his family out to the Theosophical compound in Point Loma, California. After 2 years, he had seen so clearly and unmistakably inconsistencies and deviation from the original lines laid down by HPB and the masters, that having told Catherine Tingley, that leader, having told her the facts as he saw them, he withdrew all connection with her, from her, his wealth, of course, never having been returned to him. Having reflected upon his experiences in Point Loma, he would later write in his autobiographical essay that, quote, "I truly pity her and would help her do right any time it might be in my power. I also feel most deeply towards those who are held in mental bondage by her, but nothing can be done. They must open their own eyes. They are not in a condition to be opened by anyone else. Thus, with the words in the declaration, independent devotion, Mr. Crosby would weave into the fabric of the United Lodge of Theosophists implications adverse to abridging one's own individual judgment or the cessation of the effort to develop individual intuition. In other words, trust your own judgment. Self-reliance. Develop your own intuition. Don't turn it over to someone else. In the years following his departure from the Theosophical Society, Mr. Crosby, penniless, landed a job with the Los Angeles Times. He would form a theosophical study group among his friends and neighbors, and preserving the line unbroken of the original teachings. By February 18, 1909, with his seven associates, the United Lodge of Theosophists is founded with the purpose of preserving and promulgating theosophy pure and simple. Impersonality and anonymity is stressed by him to protect the work. He brought back the three objects of the theosophical movement and the three fundamental propositions as found in the proem to the Secret Doctrine. Having dedicated his life to the effort, Mr. Crosby passed on June 25, 1919. We are told he died as he lived, calm and serene, with no word of complaint during the days of his intense suffering that preceded his release. Now, for those who would like to get to know Mr. Crosby a little better through his writings, you could read some of his writings are in the Friendly Philosopher is the name of the book, written by Mr. Crosby. Also, he wrote Answers to Questions in the Ocean of Theosophy, which goes along with Mr. Judge's text, The Ocean of Theosophy. And also, he is the author of the later chapters in the Notes of the Bhagavad Gita. And of course, he wrote a plethora of articles in the original theosophical literature. So we are now followed by four readings from the writings of H.P. Blavatsky, Mr. Judge, and Mr. Crosby. And after that, we will have a talk on the United Lodge of Theosophists, its mission, and its future.
From the writings of H.P. Blavatsky. Theosophy is as old as the world in its teachings and ethics, if not in name. Underlying every ancient popular religion was the same ancient wisdom doctrine, one and identical, professed and practiced by the initiates of every country, who alone were aware of its existence and importance. To ascertain its origin and the precise age in which it was matured is now beyond human possibility. A philosophy so profound, a moral code so ennobling, and practical results so conclusive and so uniformly demonstrable is not the growth of a generation or even a single epoch. Fact must have been piled upon fact, deduction upon deduction. Science have begotten science, and myriads of the brightest human intellects have reflected upon the laws of nature before this ancient doctrine had taken concrete shape. The wisdom religion is the inheritance of all the nations the world over. The aims of theosophy are several, but the most important of all are those which are likely to lead to the relief of human suffering under any or every form, moral as well as physical. And we believe the former to be far more important than the latter. Theosophy has to inculcate ethics. It has to purify the soul, if it would relieve the physical body, whose ailments, save cases of accidents, are all hereditary. It is not by studying occultism for selfish ends that one can ever reach the true goal, that of helping suffering mankind. As mankind is essentially of one and the same essence, and that essence is one, infinite, uncreate, and eternal, whether we call it God or nature, nothing, therefore, can affect one nation or one man without affecting all other nations and all other men. This is as certain and as obvious as that a stone thrown into a pond will, sooner or later, set in motion every single drop of water therein. It is an occult law that no man can rise superior to his individual failings without lifting, be it ever so little, the whole body of which he is an integral part. In the same way, no one can sin nor suffer the effects of sin alone. All pain and suffering are results of want of harmony. And the one terrible and only cause of the disturbance of harmony is selfishness in some form or another. Hence, karma gives back to every man the actual consequences of his own actions without any regard to their moral character. But since he receives his due for all, it is obvious that he will be made to atone for all sufferings which he has caused, just as he will reap in joy and gladness the fruits of all the happiness and harmony he had helped to produce. Make men feel and recognize in their innermost hearts what is their real, true duty to all men, and every old abuse of power, every iniquitous law in the national policy based on human, social, or political selfishness will disappear of itself.
Robert Crosby. There are beings who come into the world from time to time with no marks of distinction that we, as human beings, can recognize. But possessors of a knowledge which we ardently desire to possess, they are never recognized save by the very few while they are among us. But when they go, that which they have given tells us what they were. So the teachings of theosophy, a knowledge which is absolutely scientific, covering every department of nature, explaining all that now are mysteries, declare the nature of those beings who brought theosophy, our elder brothers. And they, who have raised themselves out of our ranks, do not leave us in trouble, in darkness, in ignorance. Their desire is that we shall see, understand, know ourselves, that quickly setting right the ideas which we hold of life, our letting right actions flow from right ideas. We may act as divine beings. The great message of theosophy is for the hungry, for the weary, for those who see the absolute paucity of what has been put before us as knowledge by those who style themselves our teachers. For them, there is a way. For them, there is food in abundance. For them, this whole movement is kept in being by the will of the elder brothers who have carried these great eternal truths through good and evil in order that mankind may be benefited, not desiring any reward, not desiring any recognition, desiring only that their fellow men, their younger brothers, may know, may realize what they know. The way to know the truth is to get back to what the teachers themselves gave, both in philosophy and in right work. If that is done, it will be found that there is neither variableness nor the shadow of turning in the ULT from the lines laid down by those teachers. Either theosophy pure and simple, pure and undefiled, is the most real thing in the world, or we are all wasting our time and effort. If we are able to conceive its reality in all seriousness, we should then never cease trying to understand and apply what has been recorded for our guidance and instruction. What is the distinction between theosophy and anything else? In fundamental principles, I should say. Nothing else affords an all-inclusive view of existence. All kinds of sincere efforts help. All kinds of system contain some truth, but they all fall short because they all exclude or ignore some part of that nature. Students have missed much by careless reading. If this is a movement inspired by masters, and if HPB and Judge were their mouthpieces, there is the necessity for looking into the meaning behind the words they used. I do not think that they used words purposelessly. It is for us and for all others who would serve them to apply their teachings. There is no time limit to effort.
These few words are from William Q. Judge, and they are excerpts from the Gita notes. All of us are brought to this study by our own request, made to our higher self, who is Krishna. It does not matter whether he now is consciously aware of having made the request, nor whether it was made as a specific act in this life or in many another precedent one. It was made, and it is to be answered at the right time. Some of us have asked this many times before in ancient birds of ours, in other bodies, in other lands. Others are making the request now, but it is more than likely, in the case of those who are spurred on to intense effort and longing to know the truth and to strive for unity with God, that they have put up the petition ages since. We take up the gauge over and over, life after life, and experience after experience, never completely defeated if we are always look to Krishna, our higher self. All the passing shows of life, whether fraught with disaster or full of fame and glory, are teachers. He who neglects them neglects opportunities which seldom the gods repeat. And the only way to learn from them is through the heart's resignation. For when we become in heart completely poor, we at once are the treasurers and dispersers of enormous riches. The attitude to be assumed then is that of doing every act, small or great, trifling or important, because it's before us to do. And as a mere carrying out by us as instruments of the will of that deity who is oneself. This practice is the highest, that which someday we must and will learn to perform. Effacement in the Supreme Spirit is gained by the right-seeing sage whose sins are exhausted, who has cut asunder all doubts, whose senses and organs are under control, and who is devoted to the well-being of all creatures. If the last qualification is absent, then he is not a right-seeing sage and cannot reach union with the Supreme. It must follow that the humblest imitator, everyone who desires to come to that condition, must try to the best of his ability to imitate the sage who has succeeded. And such is the word of the Master. For he says in many places that if we expect to have his help, we must apply ourselves to the work of helping humanity to the extent of our ability. No more than this is demanded. Krishna says that those who with the eye of spiritual wisdom see that the self is all, begin to reincarnate with that belief ingrained in them. Hitherto, they had come back to earth without that single idea, but possessed of many desires and of ideas which separated them from the self. Now they begin to return fully at rest in the self and working out their long accumulated karma. And at last, they become a Mahatma, or great so.
These few paragraphs are from the writing of Robert Crosby. It is to the teachings that attention has to be called, not to ourselves who are only handling them as best we can. If one sees that in many ways he is not able to do all that needs to be done, or that he would like to accomplish, it is evident that he is, in a way, of improving. Our ideas are never reached. They continually precede us. As a man thinks, so he becomes. Time is an element in this, and it is shortened by patience doing what it can. To be in the least cast down by our apparent imperfections is a form of impatience, a disregard of law. Whatever comes is right until something better appears. Observe defects will fade out under observations. So we can cheerfully bear with our own defects as well as those of others while we go right on working. Could right philosophy be implanted, even the single idea of the divine nature in man, a greater impulse would be given to right living than a sought by those so quickened. Without right philosophy, strengths and especial faculties are useless. If all study is to be as to be the better able to help and teach others, there must result a general gain and help. Theosophists must point out errors by comparison with theosophy. Methods must vary with the time, the place, and conditions. Few minds, especially those attracted by the lure of the occult, in quotes, are able to make application in any wide sense. Distinctions have to be pointed out to them. We have to learn a way that the way to present truth is by examining various beliefs in its light. The right way to obtain consideration of the idea we have to present implies a full sense of freedom on the part of the one who listens, as well as the part of the speaker. In these days, proselyting, propaganda, and for all sorts of isms, there is the more need for tolerance if we are to find those chinks in the mind of others through which questions may possibly be aroused. We can set the example by examining anything on its merits and then presenting in contrast the theosophical view, which accords with the nature as a whole. I think that the word theosophy has power. If it had not, there would not be so many misusing the name. In spite of all these, theosophy itself is untouched. Our work is to keep it pure and as it was delivered to us for the sake of those who can be helped. Theosophy, pure and simple, is the standard by which efforts may be applied and errors combated. So it must always be kept evident as the source of all right effort.
We must reiterate some of the things that were read and some of the things that were said. This wisdom, this accumulated wisdom of the ages, has been preserved by wise ones, beings who have perfected themselves in prior periods of evolution, who now preserve these ancient truths so that when man is ready, they bring it forth. HPB was a messenger. William Q. Judge was a messenger. Robert Crosby was a messenger. The message is that theosophy is the philosophy of the perfectibility of man. That man is perfectible, that he can be as those elder brothers. It's by dwelling in our perfectibility, dwelling on that idea, that we clean up our imperfectibility. We see it more clearly. Now, so in accord with these ancient ideas, the ancients taught in a different way, from teacher to pupil, from pupil to another pupil. So this is called the guru-guru-parampara chain. It is a chain of living beings who transmit these ancient truths. Now, H.P. Blavatsky made no bones about saying that this is not hers knowledge. This came directly from those masters. She but had a string to tie the flowers together. She made no claim that these were her ideas. Over and over again, she said that she was but an agent of those great beings. And in turn, when she met William Q. Judge, she recognized him, she recognized in him their close association in prior lives. And she too brought his attention to her. And he became a student of HPB for the rest of his life. And if we read the writings of HPB and William Q. Judge, we will see that what they have said is not for just one class of people. It is not for just one kind of people, but it was for everyone. And we sometimes laugh because we say, well, we'll read HPB, we'll read the Secret Doctrine, and we'll understand everything. But we've come to realize that's the journey. That's only the beginning of that journey. And that Mr. Judge carried on that journey in a more simpler expression of these ancient ideas. And then in turn, Robert Crosby was a student of Mr. Judge. And he in turn became a transmitter of these ancient ideas. In fact, we challenge you that if one reads the Bhagavad Gita, go to the notes which help to explain and some of the ideas that are posed. And I challenge you to see where Mr. Crosby ends and where Mr. Judge ends and Mr. Crosby begins. We'll tell you though, 7 chapters are Mr. Judge's, 11 are Mr. Crosby's. So one should make note of that. That we as theosophists, we are not theosophy. And only the best among us are transmitters. Our goal is to bring this living body of knowledge to the world in hopes that we can save poor, suffering humanity. In fact, this is one of the goals or one of the objectives of the ULT, the Theosophical Movement, was to try to form a nucleus of universal brotherhood. And in so forming that nucleus, when that is formed, it begins to accumulate around itself those who are philosophically bound or engaged in these ideas. That our unity is based on our spiritual identity, because we are all spirit that has descended into matter, and now we are reascending again into spirit. But there is that aspect of us that ever bears witness to the change, that which is in us that never change. That is a principle which pervades the universe. So brotherhood is not an ideal, but it's a fact in nature. So we are asked to see, to look at those around us. How are they my brother? How should I treat them? How would I want to be treated? And we are not so far removed. We are physically separate, but spiritually we are one. We are that unity. And the more we act on that, the more we progress. Now, it's said that we want to know this wisdom. We want to understand it. Well, the bridge to this accumulated wisdom are the teachings of H.P. Blavatsky, William Q. Judge. And if we really get confused, Robert Crosby's there to help. Because they are all in the same mission. What happened after the teachers died, there was a clamor for successorship, as was noted, Mrs. Tingley and the Point Loma group. But there were others that claimed to be the successor. And if I may read a statement from Buddha, where he said to his disciple Ananda, "It may be, Ananda, that some of you will think the word of the teacher is a thing of the past. We have now no teacher. But that, Ananda, is not the correct view. The doctrine and the discipline, Ananda, which I have taught and enjoined upon you is to be your teacher when I'm gone." So there was no successor. There could be no successor. So what happened? All the writings became obscure. Only a few students still possessed them. And then we found the secret doctrine. And the students were amazed. There were over 40,000 changes made in the secret doctrine alone. 40,000. So Mr. Crosby saw this as a roadblock for each of us to gain self-reliance and to gain the ability to find this knowledge and show us the path on which we can walk. Just as these great beings have imparted this knowledge to humanity and keep it alive, for they themselves have sacrificed much. They have sacrificed their reward in Nirvana to stay in the atmosphere of this earth, ever trying to current the world with good thoughts of brotherhood and equanimity among each other. So, Mr. Crosby had a mission to put back into print all the original teachings of H.P.B. and William Q. Judge. And with that, he created what would we say?
A publishing
house, which is now centered in Los Angeles. That lodge was formed in 1909. It was the first and original lodge. It is the mother lodge, we would call it. Then in 1922, New York Lodge was founded. 1925, we were founded, along with London. In 1928, Paris, 1929, Bombay. Now, the first thing in 1925, just when we were being born in the city, the secret doctrine was reprinted in its original form. In fact, they are electric plated photographs of the original manuscripts. So we have what this teacher has presented to the world in its entirety. No one stands between us and knowing the truth. No one. And we are very fortunate and grateful for that opportunity. For it is said that we have called it forth. So we need to take opportunity of this. It is said we are in the dark age, the age of Kali Yuga, that where everything that is high or was high is low, for everything that was low is high. So we should consider ourselves very strong to in this current of oppressive materialism and separateness and jealousy and personality, to persevere, to come again to this philosophy. And I am sure that we will all be together again in another life, doing the same work, helping humanity. And if we cannot help, we keep on trying. And a little trying is better than no trying. So we always need to make the effort to help. Help. We don't learn these ideas to be better than our brother man. We learn them so that we can help. First, we help ourselves by understanding the truth. Secondly, we understand so that we can better represent that truth in the world in which we live. Now, one of the other objects to the United Lodge of Theosophists was the study of ancient religions and philosophies and try to show the importance of them. Well, in reading, one of the writers sort of made a joking gesture. You don't have to go far. Just go back to your book table, probably. You'll find the Upanishads there. You'll find the Bhagavad Gita. You'll find the Voice of the Silence. These are basic tenets of all religion. But these are so ancient that, as many of us probably have done in times past, these ideas had to be memorized, and they were passed on from teacher to student and student and student. The analogy is sort of like an old-time fire when the bucket brigade came out, and they formed a line, and they passed the bucket on, passed it on, and they kept it up. That's what we are. That's what we do. We take what we have learned and we try to apply it. We try to make our lives a source of comfort to those around us. Now, being as it is of different sort, because the world in which we live does not believe these things anymore. They have forgotten them. It has been hidden from them, and they don't know how to clear away the Maya, the illusion which we have created as human beings. For we, human beings, are the creators of karma. We have created it, and it comes to us unrelentingly and gives us opportunity after opportunity to correct that which we have put out of balance. To understand the consequences of even our thought and our feelings. Science has found that our thoughts and our feelings have such a great bearing on our health. On our health. And our moral nature, how we think and feel. We are very powerful beings. And that's why, on this third object, to explore and try to understand other religions and philosophies, and it's really to investigate the unexplained laws of nature and the psychical powers latent in man. Now, we say that, and we stuttered when we said it, because we are warned. We're not here to develop them. We're not here to develop these psychic powers. In fact, in this day and age, it's a curse. If those powers develop in us, we must keep it private and quiet. We must gain strength in our inner nature. And the only way we do that is by knowing what the truth is and applying it. If we don't apply what we don't know it. It does not mean anything. It's an intellectual understanding. And theosophy may be intellectual in some respects, but it is the doctrine of the heart. And it's often said, we need a compassionate mind and an intelligent heart. Because we are led around by our feelings and ideas. So we need to have them grounded in fundamental ideas. And Mr. Crosby put together a declaration. And this declaration is found on the back of our periodical. And we would say, oh, Mr. Crosby, that's quite good. You really captured the essence of this. And he said, no, I didn't write that. This is a compilation of sentences and paragraphs that Mr. Judge had made. And he just embodied it in a declaration. One should read this and take to heart what one finds in this declaration, because it is independent devotion. Independent devotion. And we come together as students to gain strength and share in these ideas and express them and try to formulate or to fine-tune that idea into our understanding so that we become as the universe. What we do, we are the universe. We are evolving from within outward, just as the universe does. So our thoughts and feelings and ideas color that expression. So the more we can make ourselves a better vehicle for the expression of these ideas or knowledge which we all hold within, we become an instrument of that great lodge. Because it's said in the Gita and in the Voice of the Silence, we need to clean up the instrument. We need to make it a vessel for truth and spirituality. But remember, you cannot force it. You have to become it. You don't, I'm going to become a vegetarian today. I'm not going to eat meat anymore. Well, that may be fine. But in your heart, you have to resign yourself to why you're not doing that. Not out of pressure from those around us, but from a deep conviction within us that all of life is sacred. All of life. And as we become deeper and deeper students, these ideas become self-evident. The idea that we have all come from the same source, all of life. All of life is conscious and awake. Every atom, every stone, every insect, the earth itself is alive. It is a being. All that we see around us are beings. And we as well, but we stand atop this heap of evolution. And we become the masters of the universe in which we live. And we treat it as we believe and feel. As we believe and feel. If we love one another, we do not talk harshly to one another. If we love one another, we try not to hurt one another. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. These are fundamental ideas that ULT embraces. It states that we are a philosophy, not an organization. We talk about principles, not personalities. We are all souls. We are not positions that we hold. We are all students, not teachers. We are all workers, not followers, and free and not dependent. Mr. Judge, we find in his writings just an expression of our two teachers of H.P. Blavatsky and Lenin Q. Judge. He embodies those teachings and a practical application of them in the world in which we live. Mr. Judge was a lawyer. Mr. Crosby was a businessman. But we see the sacrifice that they made to continue this philosophy. Now, there are three objects. One is of a principle, eternal balance, immutable and omnipresent. It pervades the universe. It is space and everything that is contained in it. And that periodically, there is a periodicity of all of life. We see in our four seasons, we see even the currents of the ocean, and that our destiny is through self-induced and self-devised means work toward that divinity which each of us possess. And in the words of Shakespeare, we must say, we are here neither to praise nor bury Robert Crosby, rather to accord him gentle justice in tribute. Meeting adjourned. Oh yes, and please mingle.